And then I got injured, and all I could do was lift weights for 93 straight days. This is hilarious. I did the same lift for 93 straight days. Team go out of town. I'm at the rink in the gym. Team has a game. I'm in the gym during the game. And like, I just pushed myself every day. And I went from this skinny, weak-minded, weak physically kid who was a skill guy the year before, comes here, isn't good enough to be on the fourth line, isn't tough enough, isn't, you know, mature enough, any of these things. And I kind of just like pushed my way through that to be able to then, I gained like 20 pounds while I was injured, like just lifting and eating. And I came back, and that built so much confidence in me. Building my body up built so much confidence for me on the ice.
That was former pro hockey player, peak performance coach, and co-host of the Hockey Think Tank, Jeff LaVecchio. And you are listening to the Up My Hockey Podcast with Jason Podolin. Just watch me now. Welcome to Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin, where we deconstruct the NHL journey, discuss what it takes to make it, and have a few laughs along the way. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, a 31st overall draft pick who played 41 NHL games, but thought he was destined for 1,000. Learn from my story and those of my guests. This is a hockey podcast about reaching your potential. Hello there, and welcome back to another episode, or welcome to your first episode of Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin. I am your host, Jason Podolin. I'm a former pro hockey player myself and got into this podcasting, let's call it game, almost 3 years ago. And we're at episode 123. I was doing the math on that the other day. It's like, they're at least an hour, most of my episodes. And, many or more. So we have to be at well over 150, 160, 170 hours of recorded podcast content. That's a lot of hours. That's a lot of time in front of a mic having conversations. And it's interesting because it's like any other skill, I guess. The more you do it with intention, the better you potentially get at it. And only reason I'm bringing that up is because I have been getting quite a few, compliments lately about the shows and about the discussions and the presentation and whatever, the production value. So that's all super cool. I guess maybe we're getting better at it, which is fun. I just had a coaching call with a group up in northern BC, and we were talking about the differences between a fixed and a growth mindset. That's a big focal point of the third week of my peak potential process, and the differences of the two mindsets and how we can choose between the two. And when we're operating with a growth mindset and the idea that any skill can be developed, we are here to learn and grow, that you can get great at anything. And by no means am I saying that because I think I'm great at podcasting. That's far from the truth. But the idea is that when you put in time and effort, you do get better. And so it's been a fun ride for me. Thank you for being here and joining me on that ride. And it's funny because the ride takes you some crazy places. I was, as far as an intro to this episode, I was on my Instagram scrolling a little bit, and this gentleman by the name of Jeff LaVecchio had been on it a few times. And I kind of dug into him a little bit and just said that he was a pro hockey player and our former pro hockey player, and I liked his vibe of his videos, and he seemed like he was a pretty enthusiastic, passionate guy that knew his stuff, and he had 110,000 followers, and I was like, you know what, this is great. I haven't talked to somebody in personal training for a while. Maybe I'll just reach out on IG and see if he's interested in coming on the podcast. That was like the extent of my research. It was a 30-second video watch. I looked at a few of his other videos and sent him a DM. And anyways, Jeff got back to me right away. Super, professional, classy. Yeah, I'd love to do it. Super enthusiastic. We sorted it out. We got it figured out. And boom, he's on the pod. So the funny part about this one is, one, first of all, he's a riot. Like, Jeff's awesome. I think you're going to love this interview if you haven't seen anything from him before. I can just tell he's super comfortable in his own skin. And he's been on a, he's had a few interviews before, he's been in front of people before, so he's a good talker. We have a lot of the same ideals and philosophies and insights, so it's fun to bang some stuff off each other. And I had a blast getting to know him. But the funny part here is that I assume that he was, you know, and I shouldn't say just, but he was a personal trainer and he was a retired pro hockey player. So those were the two connections that I had to him. And when I looked him up, as far as research was concerned, which I usually do with pro hockey players, I just kind of go over their elite prospects, their EP page, see where they played, see who they played with, see where they were drafted, you know, I mean, kind of understand a little bit of their hockey journey. With Jeff, I was assuming we were going to talk more about, you know, the idea of physical development and growth and what he does with training. So I didn't dive in too deep to his hockey, and I thought, okay, we'll have a great discussion here about training. And then we get into the podcast, and I can't even honestly remember now, because I'm recording this a few days after we had the discussion. But at some point, it comes up that he is the co-host of Hockey Think Tank. And many of you maybe now listening to this are maybe that's why you're here, because you are a follower of Hockey Think Tank. And I am aware of the podcast, but I believe I've maybe, and I say that on the I've probably listened to about a half of one of the episodes. I'm just not able, honestly, to listen to podcasts. It's crazy. Like, long days, have kids, want to spend time with my family, and there really isn't much time in a car, and there isn't much time downtime for me just to listen to podcasts. So I've heard great things about the podcast, but I have not listened. And I know that it's a big podcast. I know that they've been around for a while. I know they have quite a large following. And anyway, so lo and behold, we're whatever, 10, 15 minutes into this discussion, and I find out that he is the co-host of the Hockey Think Tank. So that was kind of a slap in the face for me. I should have known that. I would have probably prepared a little bit differently for this episode, but I'm very transparent with everyone that I meet, and even I believe with you who are the listeners, that I don't do a ton of research, and I just find that for me, that is what works. Like, I think that you are here because you enjoy the conversations. I think that you're here because of the direction that they go and kind of the freelance way in which they happen. Like, they're super authentic. There's nothing planned. I don't have a question list. I just try to be a curious, interested person, trying to find out things that are intriguing about whoever my guest is. So I find that when I have done all this research, it's hard for me to do that. I feel like I'm following some type of, you know, template or how to guide. And it just doesn't sit well with me. I have tried that on different shows. So anyways, this time it kind of caught me in the butt a little bit, because I would have loved to have known kind of some of who the guests were and gone down that, and some of who would maybe have been his best conversations and this, that, and the other, maybe had a little different spin, but neither here nor there. Jeff was a great guest. This was a really fun conversation for me. Super enthusiastic. I think we both get fired up at different points. We're very passionate about what we do. And especially when we kind of seem to really feed off each other. So yeah. So for you, those who are followers of Hockey Think Tank, thank you for being here. Welcome to the Up My Hockey podcast. Maybe you'll stick around for a few more of mine. And for all of you out there who are aware of the Hockey Think Tank podcast, it sounds like Jeff wants to have me on there one time soon. So I guess we'll be a guest on that show in the near future. So without further ado, I'll just bring you the big personality of Jeff Lovecchio, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. All right, welcome to the pod, Jeff Lovecchio.
Thank you. Happy to be here, man.
Yeah, that was super slick, just as far as letting my audience know. Like, sometimes I reach out to people that I don't know, and they're a huge pain in the ass to get a hold of, and Jeff wasn't. Jeff got back to me right away, said, yeah, let's do it, let's roll, and here we are like a week later. So thank you for being easy to approach, and thank you for being easy to book. I really, really appreciate that. That's one of the biggest pains in the butt for me, is like trying to find people. So thank you for being you.
Dude, I get it. We just had our 5-year podcast anniversary. My cousin and I, we do the Hockey Think Tank podcast. And we've got, I think we're probably close to 1.5 million downloads now. And so I totally get it, man. That's we have a producer now, luckily. So like, now she helps with that stuff. But like, sometimes you're just like, oh, we have to record tonight, we don't have it, what do we do? You know, I totally get that.
Right. Well, awesome. You know what? And that shows you, I just said to Jeff, actually, before we got in, I said, hey, I don't actually know too much. And that, maybe I'll just give the background. I forgot where I saw you. You posted something somewhere, and I don't think that you were actually somebody that I was following, and then you were in my feed on Instagram. And then I did a little bit of like quick background, and I was like, oh, this is probably a great guest to chat with. So I didn't know that you were even part of the Hockey Think Tank as far as that podcast is concerned. So that's cool. So we have more in common than I maybe thought.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So what was, maybe we'll start there then. Like what was the impetus and the genesis story of you guys getting that going, and who is the co-host with you there?
Yeah, it's my cousin Topher Scott. He played at Cornell, was a captain for Cornell. And then he played a couple of years in the East Coast in CHL. And then immediately went into coaching at Miami of Ohio for a grad year, and then Cornell for a couple of years. Decided to stop doing that because he was traveling like 256 days a year or something, was barely seeing his wife. They wanted to start having a family. So he made the decision to stop doing college hockey coaching, and he got into youth hockey and started running a youth organization in New York. And it was kind of crazy. And I just retired. My last season was 17-18 in the Austrian league. And he just was like, hey man, like you're done now. You want to do a podcast? And I've always looked up to my cousin. He's only a couple months older than me, but when we were younger, he was the youngest player to ever play in the USHL at the time. I think he made the USHL at like 15 in 2001, I think it was. Right. Played for his hometown, Chicago Steel, and he's 5'4". And he had 100 points at college hockey, and he just has earned everything he ever got. And I really look up to him. And so he was like, you want to do a podcast? And the only thing I knew about podcasts was Joe Rogan. And I loved that. I watched it every night when I played while I make dinner and just like have it on in the background. I was like, yeah, dude, whatever, let's go. So we had no idea what we're doing. We had no idea how to do it. And we just started it. You know, I think it must have been November 1st, 5 years ago, a couple months after I retired, not having like that kind of gave me the need of hockey in my life while I was not having it for my first year post career. Yeah. Just talking to people, bringing on people to help players, parents, and coaches every week. We used to do it twice a week. We did that for probably 2 or 3 years. And now we went back to one a week. And then recently now we do one full length episode with a guest a week. And then we do two short shifts a week where we get one topic to talk about for 10 minutes. And that's been really fun and brought a bunch of new listeners to us. And we'll have to have you on, man, because we'd love to hear about your career.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm listening to all that. And that sounds super, super cool as far as the genesis. I cannot relate to the idea of you being gung-ho and jumping in. Like for me personally, it was a young man. I mean, I don't know, definitely a decade younger than me that I was working with at the time, just in some business development stuff that I was doing. And I wasn't actually in the hockey space. I was coaching in the executive space and, you know, kind of getting myself set up with that. My kids were still really young and like, we're just kind of getting back into hockey. And I had stepped away from the game for probably, 15 years or so. And this young guy was a hockey player, right? And he's like, why don't you do this for hockey players? You know, and it was like, it was kind of one of those ones where you get slapped in the face and you're like, why don't I do this for hockey players? Like it's the most absurd thing that I never thought of it. You know what I mean? And it was like, yeah, I should be. This is exactly what I needed. You know, this is what players need now more than ever. I have the experiential background, you know, blah, 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 blah. But his idea was, and you should do a podcast. And then I was like, no, thanks. You know, like, cause this for me, I don't know, like I'm a bit older than you, but we're still from the era. Like, you know, hockey's such a sport where it's like not about you and it's about the group and we're just not really trained to stand out. And so I had all this like imposter syndrome about like, well, who's going to want to listen to me and why should I start a podcast and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, I'm coachable. So I was like, you know what? Well, I'll give it a roll. You know, I'll give it a try. And other than all the BS that goes around it, because I'm still like really exclusively kind of a one-man show with it, the conversations are just awesome. You know, I really do enjoy the conversations.
Dude, it's given me access to people that I never would have talked to. It's given me friendships that I would have never had. It's actually wild. The impact you can have too by, you know, setting aside an hour or 2 hours or whatever it takes you a week to do it. And it's really cool. And honestly, like, I think that guys like you and I who you know, like you, I only played 7 games in the preseason, right? But I saw you played like 50 games in the NHL or a little more than that, right? And a lot of games in the AHL and in Germany, and you played in all these places. You played in Asia. I played in Asia for 2 years. Best part of my career. Absolutely loved it. But I think that all of the struggles and roadblocks that we hit and we had to go through, especially you, to grind it out in the AHL that much and then make the NHL, I think that honestly, like, it's great to hear about Connor McDavid, but like, Connor McDavid is not anyone else in the world. More people are going to hit roadblocks. More people are going to get cut. More kids are going to get told no, or you're not good enough, or you're not making the team right now. Go down to the minors, or you got cut from the USHL. You got to go to a lower league now. There's way more kids that are like that than the kids who just are the best and just have it, for lack of a better term, easy. The whole way. So I think that people like you and I honestly can help a lot of the kids who are, you know, hitting those stumbling blocks that we hit, and we were able to get through some of them. So, I mean, I think it's really important, and it's fucking awesome that you're doing what you're doing, and never discount all the people that you're helping with this. You know, it's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks. And I mean, and likewise to you, 'cause I have, I don't know. No one really cares, but like, essentially drowning some days, it feels like, between 3 kids and, you know, trying to do it all. So like, my actual own podcast consumption time is like very, very minimal. And I have heard a ton about your show, and I have heard pieces of it, like one episode, but not a lot. But I have heard a lot of great things about it. I have heard that, and it is on my list to check out. So it sounds like your topics are very similar to like what I like to talk about. And hit on, and I mean, you just kind of wrapped it up in a nutshell right there. I mean, really, really well said too. The average player, and I think, I mean, from the one I did remember, it's like, I think we're aligned in the aspect of, I love helping players be better hockey players. I mean, like that fires me up. I mean, you help players get what they want, and you know, they're feeling good about themselves, they're empowered. Obviously, I feel good by being a support hand in that. But the real good part about like the show or you know, what we do is that even outside of that, right? Like, there's a better human at the end of the day. There's a more resilient, contributing member of society. You know, and that to me is like the intrinsic value of why I think it's really fun. And that's why I think the podcast is a great vehicle, because it is it's a free form of consumption that you can give back, and you don't have to, you know, write a check for it. And we're able to have these discussions that I know they do help, as I know you do. I mean, there's lots of things that come in my inbox that are very appreciative of something that they heard or something that moved them and helped them get through something. So that's all super, super fantastic. And yeah, like, I want hockey players to be like the things in the community that are like, oh, that guy plays hockey, I want to hire him, you know, or right, her, right?
Right.
Like, they're a part of a team sport. I love that sport. They're upstanding. They got integrity. You know, they're hard workers. Like, all those things, those character intangibles. Like, I want that to be. I think hockey is that, but I want it to be even more so, right? And I kind of get excited about that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like that's kind of what your show is about as well.
I mean, you know, like, I read a stat one time. It was a long time ago, and it was like less than 1% of hockey players are going to play Division I from the whole world. And I don't know if that's true or if it's 3%, or it's definitely low. So there's going to be even less than that ever make any money at hockey, and a fraction of that are able to support them the rest of their lives from hockey. So, like, I truly believe in, especially for kids, you can use sports, and I think hockey is the best. I am biased for teaching all of these metaphorical lessons through the game of hockey, something they love doing, something they love practicing. They love putting energy into bettering themselves. We can use all of these things talking about hockey that are actually going to help them all be upstanding citizens, good people, good husbands, good wives, good brothers, sisters, daughters, whatever. And hard workers and have pride. Like, all of that is so ingrained in hockey. And maybe it's starting to like get chipped away a little bit at all the values that, like, I feel like when, you know, we were younger, we're like just hammered home. But that's why we need to be doing things like this, to keep reminding people that, hey, yeah, I know hockey is over professionalized now, but like, reminder organization, most of the kids aren't going to go pro or play college. So like, let's also not just focus on the score, which I want them to want to win, but like, let's also focus on developing people and teammates and leadership, and like, focus on all of those values as well.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of it is, and I just said that, I mean, I'm just listening to Shane Doan's interview, like my last guest, and it's all kind of echoing in my head. Like I 1000% think that better people are better hockey players.
Oh, totally.
Right. You know what I mean? Like opportunity, longevity, you know, like all these things, teammate wise, like those scenarios to me are like, you can't argue me out of that. So if I'm right in that, like one, you're going to make your goals and dreams are going to happen much better if you're working on the character intangibles and everything else that goes along with that, that hockey teaches. And like to your point, and if things don't go exactly how you want them in the big picture idea of this, of the big, hairy, audacious goal, then so be it. You're pretty well equipped to do whatever the hell you want and be hireable and, you know, everything else, right, that you mentioned. So the thing I like about hockey, and I will quote Shane Doan there. He said, he goes, what I love about it, he said, is that it's the most not about you game, team game there is.
Right.
He's like, because even as like a real good player on a team, you're playing what, 20 minutes? He's like, there's 40 minutes you're sitting on the bench trusting somebody else to go do it. Right. And he's like, and how are you contributing in those 40 minutes as well? That he was like, thought was a great question. So, yes, I mean, to your point, I think that there's so many things packed into our sport that makes it really cool. And now as a dad, I see them even more so. And as a coach than I did as a player, you know, like you're kind of just in it and you're in that ecosystem, that environment. And you know, when you're a good teammate and you see the bad teammates, I mean, they did exist. So, but I wasn't really intentional about how I showed up at the rink. I think, you know, it was kind of, you can't play pro for 10 years and be an awful human being, you know? So I was doing something right. But I think it's nice now to talk to these players through the lens of, oh yeah, like this is actually a skill that you can improve. You know, this is something you can get better at. And when you have that growth mindset about that, I mean, I've seen things like really take off for players when they do start thinking that way.
Man, like one of the reasons I love doing the podcast, and I give speeches, I do Zoom calls for players, for teams, for organizations almost, you know, weekly now. Like I was the last player picked for my AAA team in seventh grade, my first year at AAA. And I barely played. Like I played a couple shifts a game, like two shifts a game sometimes, you know, and that's what I deserved. I wasn't good enough to be at that level yet, but luckily I had amazing parents, and they weren't the parents who would ever go to the principal for me if I got in trouble. It was me going in there. And if I, not that I ever did, right. But if I wasn't playing, it was okay. Take a notebook, go into coach's office, talk to him and ask him, what can I do to be a better player so I can help the team more? It wasn't, why am I not on the power play? It wasn't my parents calling them. It was them making me go in, write it down. And then I'd go to my parents and show them, and they'd say, okay, we'll work on those things. And so that's what I did. And seventh grade to eighth grade year, I got so much better. And I was like, oh, I'll just do that again the next summer. Eighth grade to ninth grade year, so much better. Kind of get into working out. First year in USHL, wind up getting injured. Then all I could do was work out for 3 months. And again, it's like we were talking about learning to invest in yourself and make yourself better and grow as a person and not stay stagnant. Like I had to earn every opportunity I ever got, you know? And so like, I love helping people realize that ceilings, you know, they're only as high as you make them or you think they are, right? Like somebody's going to make the NHL. Somebody's going to get a scholarship. Somebody's going to make the USHL or the NHL. Why can't you be that person? I'm not saying if you do all this, you will, but somebody's going to do it. So why can't it be you? You have a chance, you know? Yeah. And I like helping people through that process.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. I love it, man. That's exactly like my message too. It's like, I mean, I'd rather go down trying the right way, you know, and wherever you land, you know, like I'm not going to tell anybody when they come to me. And that's one of the first things that I do. It's a little bit old fashioned in the sense of like, what do you want? But I call them power statements when I'm working with players. I'm like, what's your power statement? Like what at the end of this year, if you're in this like environment, like kind of your, you know, let's call it peak potential. If things go as they can, if you invest in yourself and everything goes smooth, like what does that look like? And there's always a gap, right? There's some kind of gap from where you are now to where you could be. And when we've made that example or they've made that choice, like I've never once said, well, no, that's too high, right? Like that's not for me to tell somebody that they can't do it. But it's like, now how do we put that little plan together and have you invest in yourself and do these things that are going to help you make that happen? And that's the fun piece. And I think, I mean, everyone says the process and the journey and whatever it is that word, but that is really where the juice is. You know, that's totally where it's at.
It's where you learn all the lessons that are going to help you down the road. And most of the time, because, you know, wisdom takes time. You don't really get to understand all of the lessons you're going to learn from whatever hardship you're facing right now. It's a lot easier to see that stuff when it's in the rearview mirror. But that's why they, you know, I think it's really important that people like you and I and other people who are doing the same thing can like shepherd people through those times. You know, like it's so important to have the right systems in place and the right people. We always talk about how, you know, you're going to turn out to be the five people, the sum of the five people you hang out with the most. So like, who are you hanging out with every day? Who are you spending time with? Are they people who are lifting you up? Are they people that are pulling you down? Or are crabs in a bucket? As soon as you start to be successful, they pull you back down and they want you to be at their level while you're trying to ascend. And, you know, obviously anybody who understands psychology and sports psychology, like what you said, is I have a massive hand-painted sign by a street artist in my gym here in St. Louis. It says, "What is your why?" I make the guys look at it every day. Why are you here? Cause like, you know, I train only elite players in the off season. Personally, I got 140 guys a day. And, it's literally like, why are you here? Every day I ask them, why are you here? And like, tell yourself, I'm here because my goals for this season are blank. Okay. Tell me that. Okay. Now when you show up and you're giving 93% effort, I can look at you and say, you told me you want this, this, and this. Is what you're doing right now going to get you there or no? Cause somebody out there is doing it 100. You know, and so like for me, defining your why, like you said, where do you want to be, is the most important thing you can do, because you can't reverse engineer the process so that you can create milestones and goals to hit and things like that. If you don't know where you're going, you don't leave your house without knowing where you're driving to. You know, I'm going to go to mom, you know, I want to see my mom and dad, but I'm not going to go to mom and dad's house. I'm going to start driving. No, you know where the location is and then you route yourself there, right? It's the same thing with your goals.
Yeah, it doesn't happen by accident, that's for sure. The one thing that I stole from, I think it was Nick Saban, he had a sign above his desk that says, do your words and actions align with your goals and dreams. And I think that's a really cool one too. And I put thoughts in there because what we think matters too. And the more online, and again, no one's going to, I mean, the other thing, like for people listening, and we're not trying to make some perfect robotic human. You know, I mean, like there's deviations and there's lines and it's wavy and everything else. But the idea is, at least for me, is that how intentional are we with it? And when we do have the opportunity to make these micro choices, that we hopefully make the right one more often than not, because we're actually making a decision instead of just showing up. You know, and I think when athletes have the opportunity to make decisions, generally speaking, the driven ones and the competitive ones are going to make the right ones. But it's just so often that we're on autopilot that we don't recognize when these choices are actually there and how we're showing up. So to me, it's like the skill of self-assessment. And that's the thing that fires me up. I think that's one of the most powerful skills you can do, is like you have that ability to now know where you're at and have these opportunities to make choices that you otherwise weren't making. And you know, boom, like the light bulb starts going off.
Man, did we just become best friends? Are we doing karate in the garage? That's like that's like everything we talk about, you know, every night. Like, did I live in a way that aligns with my goals? Did I get better today or did I get worse? Did I take one step forward or stay the same or one step backward? And I think, you know, if you're staying the same, you're taking a step backward, just because I want to always be, whether it's an inch or it's a mile, like just something that moves the needle north at least an inch every single day. Right. And that doesn't mean that you're a robot. It doesn't mean that you don't live, but it means you do something every day to move the needle north to get you closer to your goals.
So you speak, like, especially from your own personal story, from what I've heard so far, as you know, the kid that had to get there, right? The kid that had to get better. Like, so was that kind of a piece of your DNA, like since day one, that you've always sort of been aligned with what you're coaching right now?
I was a huge wimp. I was like not the best player. And then I had a couple years where I was good. Then I started playing AAA and I was like one of the worst players, had to grind, became the best player, get to juniors, worst player, healthy scratch, had to grind, you know, become assistant captain, go from one goal to 17 goals in the USHL or whatever. And for me, it was just kind of always like that. And, I was always a hard worker. My dad is an entrepreneur. I've watched him grind his whole life. He worked so hard just to support our family growing up. And my mom was such a hardworking stay-at-home mom, always, you know, doing everything for us and being there for us and driving us everywhere. So I definitely like caught a lot of, I think, like work ethic from my parents. Like it was taught, but I think it was just caught, just me seeing my dad. You know, he was a professional ref. He ref World Juniors in Finland. He refed college hockey, IHL, AHL, OHL, WHL, all that stuff, right? And yeah. So when I was younger, he would just kind of do that stuff, junior hockey locally for fun and to make money on the side, even though he was working like 60-hour work weeks owning his own business. And he was just a savage, you know? And so I picked that up from him, but I got to juniors and I had a coach who was just all over me, like absolutely all over me. And I had two options, sink or swim. And so like every day I just had to like forge just mental toughness or else he would have gassed me. The rules in USHL back then, you couldn't cut a high school player. It's kind of like an unspoken rule. And I wasn't ready to play in the USHL yet. So I had to put up with a lot of shit and just take it and eat it and be like, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove you wrong every single day. I'll prove myself wrong and I'll prove you wrong. And that year for sure is what forged like the mental toughness within myself and his biggest blessing ever, because it's helped me as an entrepreneur now, as a business owner, you know, as somebody who does a lot of different things in the hockey world. And from then on, it was just like my calling card. Like I have to be the hardest worker because I'm not good enough to not be. And at every level, like I'm going to have to prove myself.
Yeah, that what stopped you, or like why do you think that you made that choice? Is it the ecosystem that you were in? Like, meaning, and especially with this new transfer rule and everything else, it seems like it's so easy to face adversity and not have to go through the other side of it and just go find some easier pasture to graze in. What compelled you to fight through?
Like I said, I just was kind of like, I'm not gonna let that coach beat me. Deep down, I go back and forth whether you know he cared about me or not. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I think he did. Sometimes I think he really was trying to break me. Like, actually, you know, like for real. And if I would have said I quit, like he told me multiple times, say the words, you're done. Your hockey career is over. So like, that's what I got. USHL coach telling me at 17 years old, and I'm like, holy shit! Like, I need to do stuff. And then I got injured and all I could do was lift weights for 93 straight days. And this is hilarious. I did the same lift for 93 straight days. Team go out of town. I'm at the rink in the gym. Team has a game. I'm in the gym during the game. And like, I just pushed myself every day. And I went from this skinny, weak-minded, weak physically kid who was a skill guy the year before, comes here, isn't good enough to be on the fourth line, isn't tough enough, isn't, you know, mature enough, any of these things. And I kind of just like pushed my way through that to be able to then, I gained like 20 pounds while I was injured, like just lifting and eating. And I came back and that built so much confidence in me. Building my body up built so much confidence for me on the ice that when I came back, I was like out there like doing decently well for a rookie who missed the last 30 games in playoffs right away in the USHL. And I was like, oh my God, light bulb. Like the harder I work, the more confident I am to make plays on the ice. So like, I'm obsessed with the gym. I'm obsessed with training. I'm obsessed with all that, but it's not like just because being stronger and faster and smarter with your decision-making from work you can do in the gym helps you on the ice. The most important thing I think is it builds self-confidence. Like if you go into a corner and you feel like you're the strongest man alive and nobody can knock you off the puck, you go in there with a little bit of an edge and a little bit different mindset than maybe a guy going in like, holy, this guy's a psycho. I don't want to be near him, you know? And so that was kind of my edge from there on out that just helped me, you know, maybe have a better career than a hockey player I was.
Well, I mean, you must have been doing okay. I mean, and more than okay. You know, you speak about being in the USHL. It's not an easy league to be in at a young age, and then, you know, grew to assistant captain there. Are you underselling yourself a little bit, or?
No, I was just like, the boys loved me because they, like, my heart was like, I would do anything for any guy on the team. And like, I was a good player, right? Like, obviously I was good. I signed two NHL deals. I was a captain of a D1 school, captain in the USHL, all that stuff. But like, I was always overachieving. Like, I literally felt like I played the game with blinders on. I had terrible vision. Nobody taught me to like scan the ice. Dude, the first time I ever started scanning was in my first game. I signed with the Bruins. after my junior year of college, I go to Boston physicals, play the next like 2 days later in the AHL or 3 days later. And I'm going a million miles an hour. Like I'm the fastest man alive. It's game 60 for them and it's game one pro hockey for me. And I'm just out there buzzing. And I would like, this is when you could still like kind of murder guys from behind as you're going into the board. So I'm beating guys to pucks and they're blowing me up and murdering me from behind. And guys are like, yo, like take a look as you're going into the puck. And I was sitting there like, wow, that's a good idea. Why haven't I ever done that? Like everyone talks about scanning the ice and constantly, no one had ever told me this in 2007 till I turned pro, right? And the game got easier for me as I played with my head up more, but like I was a good player, but it was never at that level where I think anybody would ever think I had the successes that I did wind up having.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so really a tagline for what it can get you too, right? And where it can get you those things. Sure. I mean, to what I spoke about earlier, that's super impressive. I just clicked on one of your years in Providence and I was wondering if you played with them, and you did. So Trent Whitfield was my center for 2 years in Spokane. And he's assistant coach in Providence now, which I'm sure you know. And anyways, I've been texting with him a little bit recently. What's your memories of Witter?
Dude, he's the best guy, and I feel so bad, man. To this day, I still feel so bad because he was awesome. He came in. So, like, I had a very crappy start to my pro career. I signed with the Bruins after my junior year, go to the AHL, do really well, playing in playoffs. Or the game before playoffs, I blew a guy up, and I fractured my wrist. So, whatever. I played playoffs with a cast on. Come home in the summer, get my wrist looked at, and I had torn my TFCC. So it's like cartilage in your wrist. Cartilage does not heal well because there's no blood supply. So I wore this gunslinger thing on my arm for like 3 months. And I get out of it, and my first skate in the summer, and this is before my first actual year of my first real contract, right, with the Bruins. I don't know what happened. I guess I hit a bump in the ice right in front of the goal line going full speed. I went head first in the boards. I don't remember anything. I lost my memory from the night before, the morning, 12 hours, had a concussion. I missed my entire first year pro. Thought I was never going to play again.
With a concussion.
Yeah. The whole year, missed the whole year. I was, at that time, it was probably already like my seventh concussion. I don't know. Right. And, you know, I wasn't probably, who knows? I probably wasn't honest about how many concussions I had at that time or whatever, you know, and this one was really bad, like really, really bad. It didn't work out. I lost weight. I couldn't do anything. I'd puke if I went in the grocery store for over 4 minutes. So I come back, I battle my way back. It took like doctor's offices, 4 days a week in Boston, for like 6 months. Had to go see the same concussion specialist that like Crosby saw in Pittsburgh. And that started to turn the corner. I come back, whatever. I come back the next season for my second year pro. So now my first year healthy, and I crush testing in Boston. I play 5 games in the preseason over like their first rounders, 'cause I won testing and like proved like I'm going to make a run at this and whatever. And so I had a decent year that year. I got a slap shot in the face, another concussion, whatever. The next year, I was the last guy cut for the Bruins. I think again, like crush testing, would have been a fourth line guy, had concussion problems, whatever. And so I'm playing first line to start the year with Witter and Marchand. And because I was one of the last cuts the year before, if not the last cut, they kept me like the last guy there in Providence, even though I hadn't played hockey for a year and a half. They kept me the longest, right? And they're like, dude, we can't take you in the NHL. You haven't played hockey in a year and a half. So whatever, score 15. All even strength, my first year pro, zero power play time. And the next year come murder testing. We lost to the Panthers in a game 3-2. I scored our only 2 goals for the Bruins. Like I crushed testing. I beat Char's pull-up record. I'm just like, there's nothing more I can do to make this team out of camp. And they took a first round draft pick instead of me, which obviously, you know, that makes sense. Organization, whatever. But I was like, so in my head, and this is where I really wish I would have seen a sports psychologist. I get sent down and I was so in my head. I was like, I can't do anything more, knowing what I know now. It was my second year. Like, you're an idiot, Jeff. Like, why did I let it get to me so much? And I'm playing first line. Like, I got an A on my jersey second year, and I'm playing with Witter and Marshy, and like my head was mangled, dude. Like, I played awful. I think Witter probably absolutely hated me because I couldn't make a play. I was like so in my head. I had Boston telling me all you got to do is beat Byron Bitts. All you got to do is beat Byron Bitts. That's just going to get you to the NHL. And I'm like, so I go down there and I'm like, all right, like, but I'm playing first line with Marshy and Whitfield. Like, I look back and I'm like, God, you're such an idiot. I'm getting the puck and like dumping it and trying to hit guys and like not making plays. And I just went on this huge slump, couldn't like buy a goal. I think I went 22 or 23 games. And everything I did was in my head. I look back, I was a mental midget. I was embarrassing. Knowing what I know now, after 5 games, I should have called a sports psychologist. You know, like I should have called a sports psychologist and been like, I need help. I'm in quicksand right now. And I just kept digging and digging and digging. And so, you know, I got traded to the Panthers. I scored my first game there for Rochester. And I wound up having like a decent, like, I think the best I've ever played for the type of player I was in Rochester. And I feel so bad every time I think of Witter because he was such a good guy and he was such a good captain and he brought so much veteran leadership to our team. And because I was his line mate, but my head was just nowhere to be found, I was awful. And so, like, I do look back and I'm like, God, man, I feel so bad that Witt had to play with me during those, those like, maybe 15 games they gave me before they put me on the fourth line and then traded me. So,
how was he with that? I mean, that's something I talk with players about too. I mean, if he was the captain, then, and not that he's supposed to, you know, put you under his wing and solve all your problems, but was there any discussions about that, especially since you were a line mate?
Dude, he was great. He was great, you know, and I think he tried it from multiple angles, if I remember too, like buddy, like up my ass, like all the above, you know. And it was just quicksand, man. I hit like freaking 15 posts and crossbars, and every time I do it, it would like, I'd be like, why me? Like, shut up, you're in the AHL, you're on a NHL deal, shut up and play the game, Jeff.
Right.
And I'm just like, poor me, you know. And I look back and it's embarrassing, but it was another learning experience in my career. It helped me to learn how to get out of slumps later in my career, which is great. And it's something that I can help players with now, you know? So it is what it is. I just use it to help younger players now to learn from my mistakes, right? And be better than I was.
Just going to take a short break from my conversation with Jeff to acknowledge the fact that a lot of you have been reaching out to me lately, and it seems like it must be that time of year. You know, we're into the season, we're a month or two in, things are going smoothly or not, trying to find our way or not. And some things can pop up. Maybe we're not on the line we want, maybe we're not playing our best hockey, maybe we've kind of fell into a bit of a rut. Or the contrary to that, sometimes people are cruising along and they want to find a way to even get better. And I love all the reasons why people reach out to me. But generally speaking, it is something is just not mojoing, right? The swagger isn't quite there. And then when that happens, people start thinking about, where could I improve? How could I solve this problem? And when people haven't considered mindset training before, players or parents, they start to get curious. Generally speaking, there needs to be some type of adversity or problem that they're going through for players to reach out. And that's fine, because that's a great time to do it. I mean, if that's what is required in order to get better and in order to, you know, level that dip out with a brand new high, then so be it. That's great. But what I wanted to do is just share that if you're curious, if you're out there right now and if you're curious, what could mindset training mean? What is that? How would that apply to me in my game right now? I created an informal little kind of onboarding form. I call it my mindset audit that I'm going to put in the show notes. So if you are listening to this anywhere, there should be a link. It's a Google form that I created. You can fill it out for your player, or if you're a player, you can fill it out yourself. Just some like 1 to 5 ranking questions. It'll take you no time at all to fill it out. It'll get submitted to me. Be as honest as you can in your self-appraisal. That is one of the things that I work with all the time. It's actually one of the primary foundational things that I work with when I'm working with players, either in a group or individually, and that is on your ability to self-assess. We are all biased in some way, shape, or form. However, we can get better at our self-assessment. And that's what this test is. It's a mindset audit, as I called. So there's not a right or a wrong. It's what your answers are at the time. And you are trying to be as truthful as you can. Do you want the puck right now? Is practice something that you're looking forward to? What is the relationship with your coach like? How do you feel you are as a teammate? You know, questions like this, 1 to 5, you get a chance to do an audit on where you are currently at. And if we're at numbers that are, you know, 3s, 2s, 1s, then this will help in a big hurry. Mindset training has the ability to change your game faster, quicker than anything else out there. When you start seeing things in a different way with a new perspective and a new light, everything can change legitimately in 24 hours. I've seen it happen again and again and again. So if you're on the other side of the fence, right? If you're like 4s and 5s, mindset training will also help, but it's a slower build of how it's going to help. It's going to give you the 0.5%, 1%. We're going to build over a course of time to allow you to gain a developmental advantage, to improve your game and to improve your training and to improve your approach. That is still going to help, but it's not going to be the shocking, sometime take your breath away type of results that can happen when you're not rolling along the way you want to. So if you are curious, go check it out. Fill out the mindset audit. I promise I'm going to put it in the notes. It should be more accessible. I think it's a great way just to kind of dip your toe in the water. And then I'll take a look at it and I will get back to you. I always get back to everybody that applies. If I think that it's something that you can take advantage of right away, then I will let you know. If I think it's something that, hey, this isn't maybe a must need right now, but you might want to consider this, you know, I'll point you in the right direction and we can start the conversation. So that is my, that's my offer for this one. I should have done it before, but the mindset audit will be in the show notes, wherever you're watching this. Click on the link. If you're a hockey player, fill it out, see what type of questions I ask, see where you're sitting, and you'll get a response from me. All right. So not until next time. This isn't the end of the show. This is just a break. So let's get back to the conversation with Jeff Lovecchio. One, I did talk to Witter and I'm like, you got to come on the pod. And he's like, I don't do podcasts. So I'm like, okay, fair enough. Some guys don't. But he would be great to have on. I know he would. But what about, Brad Marchand was another guy that I had on my hit list. Obviously, he's still playing and those guys are harder to get. But he's a star that was a minor leaguer. Like, I love that. I love all those guys that have rode the bus in the AHL that get it, understand that game, were told they weren't good enough at one point, you know, and now he's like, I think he's top 10 player in the world, Marchand.
And has been.
Yeah. What was your take on him? And maybe more so from like the idea that not a lot of people respect him, yet he's the captain of the Boston Bruins now. And I think there's obviously some crazy character intangibles there that maybe he doesn't get recognized for enough.
Oh man. He would fight an army side to side with any of his boys, like teammate, friend, acquaintance. Like, he would stand there and fight to the death against a firing squad. Like, that's who he is. Shirt off your back kind of guy. Do anything for you and makes you want to do anything for him. And he's nasty. And he's like the hardest worker. When your best players are your hardest workers, like, you're going to be a good team. Because, you know, if you've got lazy leadership and guys who are the first off and never do an extra or anything, the whole team's going to follow suit. You know, it's his success is not an accident. And he's a great dude.
But give me the lowdown. Like, did you see it coming? Like, you were his line mate, right? Yeah. And now he is top 10 in the NHL. Like, did you think this guy's going to be like one of the best?
I mean, he was so good in the AHL that you obviously could see that he was that good. You don't know that at that, like how good he was then, you didn't know it was going to translate to being that good in a better league, you know? Yeah. But I also think, and not at the highest end players like Marshy, but I also think that there's so many players in the AHL that could do well in the NHL. Like, there's so many players given the right circumstance, team, injuries, whatever, that could do well. But that, this is a different situation, obviously. But yeah, I mean, he was gross, man. Like, did I know he was going to be one of the top 10 players over the last decade in the NHL? Absolutely not. Yeah. And people forget his first year in the NHL, I want to say he played something like 23 games and he only had like an assist or two, and he was a minus player, and people are dogging him or whatever. The next year, I think he won the plus minus award in the NHL, like in his real first year, it was close. And like, he's just an all around player. You know, he's gross.
Yeah, that's cool. Him and the other one that I like is, it's impossible not to fall in love with, is Martin St. Louis, who is, you know, a minor leaguer, really, like, and really his expiry date had passed. You know, I mean, he was like a guy like me that was supposed to be some player, and then all of a sudden everyone didn't think I could be. And then I say you go from prospect to suspect, and he was kind of in that category almost, right? Like, he was told by Calgary that he will never play in the NHL, and then he ends up winning a freaking Hart Trophy in the NHL. Like,
amazing.
I love that type of story. Like, that's so cool. And talk about belief and a different opportunity. And I mean, all those things you're talking about, like that's it in a nutshell right there. I mean, he was a good AHLer that won a Hart Trophy, and it wasn't by accident. It wasn't like he got that much amazingly better. It was just that he had an opportunity. His belief system changed a little bit, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden he caught fire. And yeah, I mean, I he's another one of my dream guests. I would love to tell me you talked to him. Did you talk to him?
He's been on our podcast, and he said one of the best lines. You know, we have like a board and quotes from all these different people that have been on, amazing people. He said something that we quote maybe more than anybody else, because he probably came on our podcast in year two, maybe year three. So it's been a couple of years. But he said, I wasn't the best skater. I wasn't the best hitter. I wasn't the best goal scorer. I wasn't the best passer. But I was the best at getting better. And I was like, oh. And I tell that story to every guy I train. And one of my clients plays for the Canadians. He's injured right now. Chris Weidman, defenseman. And he tells me stories. We were talking about, he's in town right now rehabbing. And we were talking about Marty and like how just like the little things that he says that every guy in the room is just like, yeah, that other coaches like that didn't play or don't have that mindset that he did, that they just don't get. And it just makes his players love him. Like, it's just like the things that as players you think about and would be like, man, it'd be great if our coach did this, but they never do it. But like, he thinks that way. Right. And he gives his players like that leeway and stuff like that. And said the guys just absolutely love him.
Oh, that's great. I'm super jealous. I want him. And actually, I know Letowski pretty well too, as the assistant coach there with Montreal. And so Lutz has been on my podcast, and I've kind of been nudging him to try and get Marty on.
Come on. Obviously,
yeah, we'll see one of these days. Interesting. I mean, I'm just going to go here for a sec. I'm not sure why. Well, why, because you brought up the concussions before. I'm not saying this in any way, shape, or form that you didn't have concussions, but one of the guys that I've worked here locally in the Okanagan, he's an osteopath. And my son, who was my oldest son, who's 14 now, we thought, or maybe he did or didn't, that he had two concussions early in his season last year. And he missed some time, like dark room, the whole nine yards, right? Like, he was essentially bedridden, right? For like a week, came back. He had like one shift where he got hit again. And these aren't like big hits. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like he was unconscious or anything. Anyway, so he had this bout. He ended up coming back, finished the rest of the season, and it was okay. But conventional kind of therapy, right? Just rest, wait till you get your symptoms are done, and you know, go back to contact. All kind of like the status quo for how to recover from a concussion. Anyways, he goes into some tryouts last spring, gets what we think is another concussion. And now I'm like super nervous, right? Like, even as a dad, he's 14 years old, right? Playing hockey. It's like, if you're three concussions in, like, this is maybe not where you should be, right? Like, let's maybe shift gears. And we went and saw this guy. And anyways, he says to me that he's like, well, I mean, obviously I never saw the hits. He goes, I don't know. But he's like, from my experience now, like, I would put it around 60 to 80% of concussions are misdiagnosed. That it's not an actual brain. Oh, your mic is, I think, off. Oh, it's just muted right now. I get a muted sign for you. So he said, yeah. So he goes, it's not necessarily a brain injury. It's like symptoms from contact. So like, you're out of alignment. Maybe your optical nerve is compressed, you know, so your vision is off, which is giving you the headaches, you know, whatever. I mean, it goes down the gamut. And I guess I'll take this story full circle with my son. he went in there with concussion symptoms from like a week from this tryout, headaches, the whole nine yards. He left an hour and a half later, never had any more symptoms, and left without a concussion.
That's amazing.
Right? Yeah. So like super cool, right? And for me as a dad, I'm like, oh my God, like it was, I mean, maybe too good to be true and exactly what I wanted to hear. But like, I just was wondering from you and your perspective, like, have you seen that before? Like that, like an alignment issue or something along those lines that maybe it's not a concussion, because it's really tough to tell what a concussion is.
Yeah, it is tough. And a big thing actually is like the neck. Like he's obviously his doctor. Well, I've learned that doesn't always mean something, but a lot of times whiplash can mimic concussion symptoms. And what happens is like, if you get really bad whiplash, your occipital nerves are located at the base of your skull. And so when your neck muscles flare up, have inflammation, get super tight and grab down, you can get these very concussion feeling like symptom headaches that are actually coming from your neck. Because when I have my really bad one, I didn't find out till 8 months in that I also had like an extreme whiplash injury. So that was one of the things that got me over the hurdle, was starting to like really go after treating both PCS, post-concussion syndrome, and the whiplash. And when I started doing both of that and doing acupuncture and specific massages and like all this other stuff and training certain ways, I was better so much faster. So there's no doubt in my mind that there is 100% truth to what he's saying.
Yeah.
And it is really hard to diagnose concussions, you know, like it's very hard, unless it's a very bad one, obviously, because then you can see stuff that's happening in the brain.
Yeah. And those are super bad. Like the MRIs don't even show, generally speaking, you know, what's going on or what's not. And to his point, and this is just like, I don't know, like, again, we're not doctors, but I think it is good information, I think, for people out there, because it is a snap judgment now. And thankfully it is, right? Like, really, like, why not be safe? You know what I mean? Why not be safe? But I think where it can come in is like, I know how I was feeling. Like, I was scared. The kid's scared too, right? Like, now you've had a concussion. You know, now you're worried about how many you've had. Now you're worried, I mean, all these things, and then that might not be true, right? So, like, it's definitely good to step back, make sure you get taken care of. But I do think the idea that maybe it's not an actual brain injury is something that you have to, like, consider. Because the one thing that he did say to me was, and it's not always the case, and there's no cut or dry line here, but, you know, if the hit, if you're not unconscious, like, think about it. You know what I mean? Like, what did happen? You know what I mean? Like, and that was absolutely perfect for my son, because none of his hits you would even recognize as like being something that should have caused a problem.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like to actually like bruise your brain, like there should be something that's really happening there.
Right.
So like for him, the symptoms were, I mean, I'm pretty much convinced now, like it was neck, it was neck, eye issue, optical stuff that gave him these headaches that, you know, gave him the problems. And once he got into alignment, he was okay. So.
Yeah. Eyes, inner ear, like your inner cochlear rings, if those get messed up, if the crystals in your ear get messed up, like I had that, I had vestibular issues. So like mine was like all of those on top. So I was having to treat like multiple symptoms. And when I first started, well, back in the day, like you said, like the old concussion protocol, like that's the dumbest thing ever. Like sitting around and doing nothing doesn't help you. It actually makes you worse. It makes your symptoms worse. And so that old school mentality really hooped me. But luckily, like 2 years after that, they started like really getting better with them. Cause like, and it wasn't because of mine, obviously, but it, like Mark Savard's career ended. Bergeron's career was in danger. Crosby's career was in danger. There was a whole bunch of very high profile guys getting concussions right around the exact same time I got mine. And so luckily, like concussion, like protocol and studying and all that stuff, like kind of jumped really fast, or really far, really fast, luckily, because I wound up having more as my career went on, and I learned how to get over them quicker and quicker and quicker. Man, it's it sucks, you know. It's not a knee, it's not something you can play through, it's not shoulder. So like if somebody's like, oh, your brain's damaged, you're like, what? Like, you know, like you said, it can be scary.
Well, it was I don't know if I've ever talked about my concussion in 123 episodes, but like I believe like concussion free. Like I took some massive hits, like a couple times I remember in junior BCHL at 15, but like never lost consciousness. Like maybe like before I hit the ice, kind of blackout sort of scenario, but you know what I mean? Like never, I mean, I got up, wasn't headaches. I mean, I was good. I think I was really lucky. And then in practice in Germany, 28 or 29 years old, in a 2-on-1 drill on a regroup, right? Like looking back for the pass in a getting speed through the neutral zone. My feet came out as I was crossing with my forward partner. He tries to jump over me as I'm falling, and he knees me in the head while I'm not looking. Like, so we're both going full speed, other direction. You have the knee coming into the temple. I'm not looking at it. And I guess it was one of the freakiest things that my teammates had ever seen. Like, I was spinning, right? Like unconscious, convulsing on the ice. I guess I was like that for like over a minute. Like, they were trying to get a doctor. They thought I was dying on the ice. I guess it was pretty rough. I went in the hospital. I spent the night in the hospital. And that was my one, like, that was my one big one, obviously. And then there was like the recovery from that. And I mean, and no one's arguing that that wasn't a concussion. I mean, that was a brain injury for sure. And getting to the idea, well, one, I want to touch on two things. I got a concussion after that. It happened way easier than it should have. And I think that was because the brain injury was there and, you know, like whatever, but before that, like, you are the one as a player responsible for telling and detailing your symptoms. And this was like now 15 years, 17 years ago, right? So this was before concussion protocol. This was before like baseline testing, which they've taken some of that stuff out of the guys' hands, which is, I think, is great.
Yep.
But what an awkward position to be in as a player. Like, right? Like, you want to be there as a pro. You're making money. Like, you're not even sure that you really, like, what's going on. You've had a couple of good days. Now you have a headache and you're supposed to tell someone. And like, it was the most uncomfortable, awkward, gross scenario that I could ever be in. And my coach was challenging my character at the time on whether I was actually freaking hurt or not. And it was like massive line cross for me. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, did you ever experience anything like that with any of the team that you were on?
I would go to the rink. So when I, that first year where I missed the whole year, I would go to the, I lived in Boston, told me at camp, hey, if you want to live in Boston, since you're seeing doctors in Boston, live here until you're healthy and ready. And then we'll tell you to go get a place in Providence. And I was like, no, I'm going to be, you know, I'm hoping I'm going to be ready in a week. It had already been 2 months when camp rolled around. No, I'm going to go down and I'll do everything I can. But like, I literally could not do anything other than, and this is like hilarious looking back, so stupid. And I didn't want to be a burden because I got hurt in the summer right after I signed. Like, it was just like embarrassing. It was awful. I'd go to the rink every day, be there before practice when everybody had to be there. I would be there. I would sit on the couch, say hi to the guys. They walk in every single day. Guys would be like, you skating today? And I'm like, bro, I can't turn around a quarter turn without falling over. I can't go to the grocery store. I have to set a timer for 4 minutes. If I'm not out in 4 minutes, I'll get lost and be puking. Like, the room will close in on me. Like, I can't, everything starts spinning. Like, it was awful. And then I would drive myself to Boston 4 days a week for like 4 to 6 months. It was to see different doctors every day, sometimes multiple doctors. And every time I drive, when I would have to look over my shoulder to change lanes, I'd almost puke and almost crash my car. But I was embarrassed and I didn't want to tell anybody. And they were already paying so much money for me to see neurologists, vestibular therapists, this other neurologist who was giving me needles into my skull twice a week. Like, they're paying so much money. And I'm just like, I'm a burden on the organization. I'm a burden to the team. I'm just costing them money. I can't even be on the ice. It was awful. You know, it was no coaches questioned my character because I'd already played there for like 20 games and they knew that I was just like, I'll give everything I have every single day if I'm at the rink, right? So luckily they'd seen who I was before that. So I didn't get any of that, but like I every day, guys, are you going to play today? Spin me around 180 degrees and I'll forget where I am, you know? So that was hard and not having, you know, and concussions weren't like something that were talked about very much. So like that, it wasn't a knee with a brace on where I was walking in limping. I was walking fine. I couldn't walk long, but so it was, I know what you're saying, man. Yeah. It is.
People can't see anything, right? There's nothing hurt. Yeah, I mean, you look normal.
Yeah. It's tough.
And yeah, it was, I don't know. Like, it's interesting. Cause I have this, I don't know if it's probably not the same thing, but I have this group that I call the inner circle that we meet every couple of weeks. And sounds like you do some calls too with players. And so, you know, different ages, different levels. It's like an amazing community. I'm so proud of like what we have there. And we had a really cool discussion about one of my players that actually walked into his coach's office, a first year guy, like in a pretty established junior league that is trying to find his way, you know, like in and out of the lineup. And the coach made some comment about, you know, that whatever, the team's too easy to take guys out of the lineup. You make it too easy for me to take you out of the lineup, right? That was kind of like one of the comments. And so my client thought he was talking to him, right? And it was like a line cross for him because he's a kid that, you know, and I'll vouch for him. Like, he does everything that he thinks he can do to be a better player, right? And like, he's so wanting to be in that lineup and everything else. And so, you know, so proud of him. He walked in that office the next day and he was like kind of in the coach's face a little bit, like, you know, that you think this or whatever, right? And I was like, oh my God, like, how amazing. And like, one, the coach, I guess, like, took it really well, like, was like, man, like, I didn't expect that from you and I respect you, right? Like, that's really great to hear. And so I think that's, with what you do, that might be an interesting thing for us to talk about. But why it parallels to me is because my coach crossed that line with me, and that's at the pro level. And I mean, you know, in Germany, like at 28, you're on the other side of it. You know, you're kind of, you're there, but you're there because you want to be there and you're there for a reason. And I've never was a guy that was hurt. And he essentially questioned whether I was hurt or not. And like, boy, he touched a soft spot for me. And I went in that locker room or his office, slammed the door, and like, we freaking had it out, you know, like out.
Good for you.
And you know what the crazy part was, though? Like, when I thought that I was, like, disrespecting him and, like, blah, blah, like, it was exactly what he wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. It was exactly what he wanted from me, which is kind of weird and, like, calculated and everything else. And, like, you kind of don't really operate like that anymore. But, like, when I'm talking to players, it's like, you know what? You got to stand up for yourself sometimes.
Have to. Sometimes you have to. And I didn't really do that until I got to Europe. Like, when I was in the U.S., too, because of everything that happened, like, I start out my career basically, you know, ending it before it started. Like I'm not saying I would have been a 5-year NHL player or a 10-year NHL player, but I would have 100% played in the NHL. Like, I would bet everything I've ever done in my whole life that I would have at least played one game in the NHL. Like without a doubt, I would have done anything I possibly could. I told him I would fight anybody. And then my career starts with an awful concussion that all that was in the back of my head my whole career was like, even when I was not trying to think about it, like, I used to play pretty recklessly, like, beat a guy wide, drive the net, run over the goalie, hope my teammate buries the empty net. Like, that's how I played down low, just block, get in front of the net, just use my whole body any way I could because I didn't have that natural skill. I couldn't do those things anymore. So I literally had to become like a completely different player. Because I when I came back the first year at NHL camp, when I played my first preseason game the year after my concussion, the insurance company called me, who wound up, it's Basil McRae, wound up being, I trained his son his last couple years of his pro career, who's now one of my bosses, because I guess technically, because I work for him at TPH Academy, training the kids there 3 times a week during the season when all my guys are gone. And he's like, hey man, you got 10 games to decide if you're going to keep playing. You can play 9, but if you play a 10th game, you'll never be covered for insurance again. If you want to take the insurance payout, it's going to be, and it was something like $450,000 tax-free one-time payment, but I could never play pro hockey ever again. And so I was like, I have no idea. I haven't played a game in a year and a half, but I'm not taking that. And so I rolled the dice and I wound up getting to play 9 more years. So that was good. But it's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That's a tough question. That's a tough question to answer.
I didn't realize how much money that was at the time either, though. You know, you're young. I was like 24 maybe. And I didn't realize, like, tax-free $450,000 is a lot of money. Yeah. But I said no immediately. He's like, you don't want to talk to your parents, your agent? And I was like, no, didn't work this hard not to at least try. Like, whatever, dude, let's go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How does that, I mean, as far as the coaches are concerned, like with having those conversations, well, one, I was so proud of my guy just because, I mean, again, back to our point of like that takes a strong willed, self-assured, mature player to do that. You're not doing that if mom and dad have been knocking down the doors for you and making the phone calls and everything else, right? Like, that's just not going to happen. So like, the fact of like, if I had have anything to do with that with him, like, I'm super proud and I think that's great. And I know he's got a great family system and everything else. So whatever piece that was that allowed him to go in there, I hope that I had something to do with that. Cause that'd be super cool. But very few people are willing to have that conversation. And I don't know, like, how do you arm somebody to know when that is the right time? Do you think, like, when do you?
Well, I always tell guys it's really about how you say things too that matters. And I think that a lot of people are scared to talk to coaches because they've seen it happen before, whether it's parents, which automatically the wrong way, of course the coach is going to be mad. Like, no, even at the younger ages, like, let's teach those life lessons. They're going to have a boss one day or a wife or somebody that they're going to have arguments with or is going to be mad at them for something. They need to be able to handle those pressure situations, which yeah. We're kind of seeing kids now aren't able to do it because too many people coddled their kids the last probably two decades, right? At least in my opinion. It's massively important. So, like, something that I talk about with guys is your language matters. When you go in there, it's not I, me. Why am I not playing? Why am I not on the power play? I'm better than Johnny. That's not going to help you in any way, shape, or form. It should be, what can I do to help the team win? What do I need to work on so that I'm a better player to help this team win? What are things I can work on after practice so that you trust me in the penalty killing situation? What are some things I can do to be a better player, a better teammate? How can I be better? Like those are the questions you should be asking, not demanding things that you right now, the coach does not think that you deserve or you have earned, right? So you need to figure out a way to learn why in a respectful manner, but have confidence and go in there. And then if you know you're playing well or whatever, and you have stats to back it up and that's not happening, I tell them to go in there and talk to the coach with the stats like there, like, okay, coach, like, you know, I'm just, you know, you said my faceoffs were 32% the last six games. I'm at 54, you know, I've been a +6 over the last four games and I've got two assists. I know I can be better, but what else can I be working on here? Because since our last meeting, I've gotten a lot better. You know, here are the stats that I had and here's what I worked on. So, you know, I think some coaches, like, they get whipping boys, you know, it does happen. And I think that sometimes they overlook with their whipping boys, like, the positive things they are doing for whatever reason. They don't like the way they play, their mindset, whatever it is. So if you can go in there once and have a baseline of what you need to work on, and then nothing changes and you can go back in there in six games, 10 games, whatever, and have evidence that you've made improvements or whatever, I think that it kind of just opens their eyes a little bit and also opens up the dialogue for you to then defend yourself at least a little bit in a respectful manner.
Yeah, no, I think those are all great points. I'll add to that in the sense of, like, when you get those things right that we talked about earlier, like when your words and actions and your well, thoughts, I mean, the coaches don't see that though, but when your words and actions line up with what you want, it gives you you know that you've done the things that you need to do, right? So there is, like, some self-assurance in there that you can go through this door because you've maybe earned the right to have the conversation. So I think, you mean, having a check mark beside that is like, am I showing integrity to my own process, my own plan, for sure is going to help you go through that door. And the one thing I'll add to what you said is, and I'm just thinking about a conversation I had with Brad Larson, former head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was saying at that level that, what you just said is like, that's generally the conversation, right? Like, what can I need? I want to be on. Everyone wants minutes, he said, right? Everyone wants minutes. Everyone wants opportunity. He says, you will give a guy a plan as a coach because I'm supposed to help this guy get better. And he's like, even at their level, that fact that that guy's still working on that in 4 weeks, he says, is so rare.
Crazy.
And that's mind-blowing. To me, that's mind-blowing, right? I can't even say that from a personal standpoint, but I can a little bit because no one had that conversation with me, like not right. once, right? Right? Like, we want this from you and I want you to get better at this, right? Like, that would be so fabulous and wonderful. It was like playing in the dark, but I couldn't believe, I mean, so talk about the accountability to your process and the integrity and the professionalism and all that. So, I mean, I think what you said there is fantastic, but my goodness, they got to execute then, right? Like, I mean, they got to take that and run with it.
Yeah. I love that you said, like, you didn't get that because, like, mine was be like Byron Bitts and you'll get called up. And then I did nothing that I was currently doing and just tried to dump the puck in and like run guys and be somebody that I wasn't. I wasn't as tough as Bitsy. I wasn't as big as Bitsy. You know, all these things, a better player than me, right? And so I think they need to be, you know, they definitely need to be giving those plans and, like, checking in and like that type of thing. But again, I put it all on me. It's not on them whatsoever. But yeah, you know, for me, you know, I do these confidence calls too. I call them, like, a lot of players lose confidence, whether it's after one game, five games, a long stretch, whatever. And like I told you, I had I went 23 games without scoring to start the year in the AHL. And that's why I got traded. And I was just, you know, wasn't playing well and everything, to the Panthers from the Bruins. And so I do these confidence calls. It's usually with pro, college, or junior players, a little bit older guys. And it basically comes down to, very simplistically, okay, you're unhappy because you're not scoring, or you're not playing on this line, or the power play, or whatever. What are you doing to like do the things you need to be doing to get there? And usually what I've found is they just keep focusing on the results. Like, I want points, I want more playing time, I want this. Okay, like, what are you doing differently right now? Or what were you doing when you were playing well? Little details. What were you doing? Reverse engineer it, that you were getting those opportunities. A lot of times they stop those things because they focus on the shiny result. And so I think, and this really helped me in my career, and it's helped a lot of players that I do these calls with, is like, let's boil it down to like five things. And these could be things the coach told you need to work on, or, you know, things that are your strengths. And like, for me, mine almost always were the same. Usually like the fifth one would change depending on the league and my role on the team. But for me, I was not good if I didn't do these things. So I stopped focusing on scoring and I did these things, and the scoring would happen, or the, you know, good penalty killing would happen. And for me, it was like, always move your feet, shoot everything, go to the net, stop and stay there, stick pressure body. And then the fifth one was always changing depending on my role in the team, but usually it would have something to do with like some kind of leadership piece, like, you know, always be talking on the bench, on the ice, get the guys going. I was an energy guy. I liked helping other guys find like fun and energy within practices and games. So it's usually something to do with that. And the more I focused on only these and judging my performance on only these, the results always came. But whenever I focus on the results, I stopped doing those, and then I didn't get the results, right? So for me, that's like my biggest advice to players, is like, find out the four or five things that you can key down and just like focus on every day. And those, if you judge yourself on those, if you don't score in a game, but you did those well, it means you're doing all the things that's going to get you the opportunities to score, to be on the ice in the last minute, all of those things. And I think it's just much smarter to base, you know, your own feelings about your play off of those things.
Oh yeah, brilliant. I mean, definitely exactly the same things I get my guys to go with. And I think players, and even when you're in it as a pro, like, you underestimate the value of what isn't on the score sheet, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you can have a goal and an assist, and that's awesome. And you might have had a couple good plays that allowed that to happen, but you might, like, what happened on all the other 19 shifts that you had? Like, I try and get players to think about how you impact the game when every time you're on the ice. Like, what was your impact? You know, I mean, and to your point, there's going to be different attributes and characteristics to a player type that is going to be conducive to impacting a shift, right? How do you impact a shift? And at the end of the day, if you have goose eggs on the goals and assist column, but if you were on the right side of the puck and you defended well and you blocked a shot and you created the turnover for somebody to get some ozone time that created momentum for the next line to score, like, that's the thing that as a player, you don't necessarily see that big picture and what those guys in the stands are going. Like, this is a glue guy that's like, he's great even when he's not in the score sheet. So, like, I think they can kind of get a little ahead of yourself, you know. And obviously I was one of those guys. I was supposed to score goals wherever I was, so I mean, that was a big deal for me if I wasn't scoring goals. I thought that was the number one reason why I was on that team. And then you disregard the fact that, oh, I'm a pretty physical player, oh, I'm pretty fast in the forecheck, I caused some problems, right? So to your point, like, you allow yourself and your own attributes to step forward, then sometimes those results don't matter quite as much. I think we make them matter more than they actually do in a lot of cases. The other thing is, I find, I'm sure you see that too, not only do you focus on the results, but they focus on what's going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sure. Like, now all of our emphasis is on the fact that, you know, to your point, I'm hitting posts. I'm hitting the post all the time. Well, you're probably only seeing posts when you shoot the puck too.
And it's right? All so you're thinking about is post, 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 post. Right. It's the secret, man. Law of attraction. Then you're going to hit the damn post.
Going to take one more short break from my discussion with Jeff Lovecchio to give a huge client shout out to Nathan Mackey, current captain of the BCHL Salmon Arm Silverback, for his signing of this national letter of intent to attend Michigan State University. He was committed to last season after the BCHL showcase, and has now signed his letter of intent, and he will be moving on to D1 college hockey at the end of this year. And I could not be happier for him. I couldn't be prouder of the young man that he is becoming, the leader he is, the hockey player he is building, and the member of the community that he is. He has just been one of those people that has brightened my time doing what I do, and being able to be a part of that journey, to hear him at 15 years old to say, I want to earn a U.S. scholarship. I want to play pro hockey going the U.S. development route, and earn his education along the way. And to see that come to fruition through COVID, battling through some scenarios where he had to bet on himself, through some scenarios where he had to be much more mature than his years chose, to learn the tools and the fundamentals to develop the personal skills to become a better hockey player, and to watch him double down on that and commit to becoming a better player, a better teammate, and a better leader. And to have that show up in the form of 20 plus schools recruiting him, to have that show up as him being able to kind of have his pick of the litter and to have earned every step of that is so, so cool. And yeah, I mean, it's not something that happens all the time. It's obviously not something that's easy to do. And we should celebrate it when it does happen. So Nathan Mackey, if you ever listen to this, or if anyone with or around Nathan's inner circle listens to this, I am proud of you. You should be proud of yourself, and keep rocking and rolling and pursuing that dream. And next step is going to be earning a paycheck from an NHL club. So I wish you the best. And again, couldn't be happier for you. Now let's get back to the conversation with Jeff Lovecchio. We're over an hour, and this always happens like that, especially with somebody that I align with on so many levels. But we should talk about what you're doing right now. Is there anything about the physical training? Like you said that before we got on here, that you're taking a more holistic approach to, you know, the performance enhancement coach that you're calling yourself. And Shane Doan and I just talked, like I said, there was this idea of, you know, the physical development really took off, right, in the last kind of 20 years. People are focusing on that. Now I think that the mental side of the game and of performance is really kicking in, and people are starting to understand those attributes a little bit more, and including them in player development where they weren't before. What's your approach to the physical side and the mental side that maybe you can share with my audience?
Yeah, I mean, so when I was a player, and like once I told you, like 17, when I got injured in USHL halfway through the season, that's when I really got into working out. And then as I got older, I realized the difference between working out and training. And there's a very big difference. Working out, not a whole lot of plan, not a whole lot of progression, regression, not like a start and end and peak date and all these things, right? And despite me like being all around like the most in shape player on every team and every organization pretty much I ever played in, I did not feel like my strength was translating to the ice. Like squat in a house, bench in a house, 30, 40 pull-ups, dips, like all these things. And I get on the ice and I'd fall over when I hit somebody, or I'd lose an edge, and I'm like, I'd lose battles like that were like in with other guys who were of similar size or smaller than me. And I'm like, how am I winning all of these tests and like the strongest guy in the weight room? But like, I get on the ice and that strength isn't the same. Like, what is going on? And I went to Washington Capitals development camp after my freshman or sophomore season. And Jack Blatherwick, who's like one of the fathers of USA Hockey strength training, he was the off-ice coach for the 1980 U.S. Olympic team. I just picked his brain the whole week I was there. I just like everything, just listening to him and asking him questions. And he said something to me that changed my philosophy and changed everything I've done from that moment forward, allowed me to have a way better career and affect the careers of over 10,000 players now, is that if you can do all your training in a phone booth, you're not training to be an athlete. You're not training to be a hockey player. And back then, early 2000s, mid 2000s, even still now, people like they're still like laying on a bench, bench pressing all summer long, all like the whole summer doing that, standing in a squat rack, deadlifting, like very bilateral. You're stuck in the mud. lifts, and they're doing it all the time. And there's every exercise has an application that makes sense to whatever your goals are. But like, you have to be able to move. Hockey happens on one leg at a time, right? You shoot off one leg, like you turn, one leg has more weight on the other. It's all about weight shifting, controlling your body. When you're on one limb at a time, there's way more core strength needed. How do your eyes feed into what you're feeling on the ice as far as your balance, proprioception? Do you understand the depth of space you have between you and the players around you, the boards, the puck? Do you understand all of these things? So like for me, I started using the gym differently when I was in college, but then I got that concussion and I had never even like dove into the vestibular system. My eyes were so messed up. When I would like move my eyes side to side or look to the left or right, I would get dizzy. So I did all this vestibular rehab therapy. And as I felt better and better, and then, you know, got cleared, I kept doing that stuff. And I started getting like better on the ice from training my eyes and my ears. I was like, what the hell? Nobody's doing this. Why is nobody, if balance and your eyes are connected and we do spins on the ice and we're scanning, looking for pucks, like all of that will affect your balance. So if that's, if you can connect those in the gym, you're going to be better on the ice. Well, now if you can connect your strength training and your explosive work with how are you looking around when you're training, or do you always look down in one spot like they taught us when we were younger? Like all of these different performance enhancing things that you can be doing, from mindset, nutrition, we do visualization every single day, goal setting before every lift. I make my guys, I turn on some music, they have to do on ice visualization, goal setting. They have to have specific numbers that they're seeing and setting in their head. And then I come up to them in the workout and I'm asking about their goals, so I know them all season. So if they're doing giving me effort, that sucks. And I can just whisper in their ear, you know, hey, you said you wanted 40 goals this year. Like, do you think you're giving a 40 goal effort today? Like, do you, I'm asking you, it's up to you. I can't do it for you. Immediately guys, there's nothing that snaps them out of their funk more than knowing what their goals are and then holding them accountable to their own goals and standards, right? So it's like, it's a lot of different things going on at once. I just call it training smarter.
I think that hockey is, well, I don't know. I don't know if there's a different sport. I mean, it's 360 degrees, right? Like there's a perimeter that's like a wall. You know, you can get hit from any side at any time. You need to know what's around you. You got to be strong at distance and in close. Like there's so many aspects of it that I just think it's totally not set up, to your point, to train bodybuilder style training.
No.
Now the thing for me is, and I've been told this by people who are smarter than me in this aspect, that you need to have this foundational strength, you know, in these certain areas. So like Olympic lifts are a good thing. Like I love personally kettlebell stuff, like where you're going through planes and motions and it seems more dynamic, you know, instead of just using a straight bar. So I have my own kind of feel thing that I think makes sense. But like the question I'll ask you is, we've all met them, and I'm sure they exist down in the States too, although I don't think the farmers in the States play hockey, but the farmers in Canada definitely play hockey. And those guys were tough. They didn't come in with big pecs and six-packed abs, but you'd have a hell of a hard time taking a puck off them. And they might not be built and everything else, but they were like joint tough, like ligament tough. I don't even know what it was, but like they're strong, right? Strong through ranges of motion. And for me, I was always strong, like in tight. And I was same as you. Like I got, you know, I won the, or a second, I guess. I shouldn't claim I got the title, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, like second place. Like I was always good at the testing and stuff. But I knew that when I got outstretched, like I wasn't strong at distance. I had a hard time shooting the puck when it was away from me. I could shoot the puck in close really, really well. But I didn't, I had a kind of a sweet spot that was pretty tight, you know. And I didn't really know. I did some different stuff in the gym to try and work on that, but it never really saw any gains. Like, anyways, that's just my idea of like how to train a hockey player. Like I would try and be strong in more distant areas and while moving, kind of, I think is what I would try to accomplish, but I don't know how I would go about doing that.
It's called like end range strength, like mobility. People think the word mobility means stretching. It doesn't. It means being able to control your body and sticks and things like that at end ranges. So right. like if you can sit in a stretch, like that's great, but could you hold a weight in there? Could you fight off a guy in a fully, you know, elongated lunge position? Do you have that strength? If you're constantly training with barbells, like you're in a fixed plane of motion, you're like, it won't be symmetrical, but like for the most part, we'll say it will be. Your core does not have to work that hard other than back squats, but I fucking hate back squats. Sorry about the F-bomb. I believe in unilateral, ipsilateral, contralateral training, and literally exactly what you said. Like I could have helped you so much, man. Like think about a bench press, barbell bench press, right? First of all, you're in a fixed plane of motion. You have no ability to rotate. You have no ability to rotate your hands. You move your elbows, your wrists, your shoulders, they're locked in. But like that also, we all have the same bones, but they're all shaped differently. So everybody's doing the exact same movement pattern from the bar's trajectory, but none of us have the same shape bones. Like that doesn't make sense. Dumbbells, kettlebells allow you to rotate, allow you to find which position feels best for your levers and fulcrums. If you do that barbell bench press, right? Your back's flat, your feet are flat. The core is not being demand. There's not a lot of demand on the core. Now, what if you did a single arm dumbbell bench press and your feet are close together? I've got 90 pounds in my hand. As I bring that dumbbell down, it's getting further away from the center of my mass. I'm starting overhead. That's right over center mass. No core activation. As soon as I start bringing it down, that dumbbell is further away from my center line, which means the opposite side of my body, my adductors, both of my adductors getting lit up all the way down to my feet, pressing into the floor, my glutes, my hips, my obliques. Because that weight is over here, I have to resist rotation because the weight is so far away or else I'm going to fall over. So now you're training a pushing movement while working all of your hockey muscles between your nipples and knees and working on not rotating, okay, and having strength with your arm out. Like, it's exactly what you're talking about.
I love that. You know what? You know why I even love it? And again, I'm just screwing around I've got a little garage gym. And so I was doing kettlebell stuff, and I did like a what you're saying. Exactly. So, and it was the first time I've ever done it, but I had one kettlebell that I would do like essentially a one arm fly with it. And then I'd transfer it to the other side and go the other way. And it was crazy. Like how it lit up my core, like everything else had to work. And I felt like much more of an athlete doing that. Then, you know, I mean the contrary, right? Doing double and everything stationary and stable and you're in this safe place. Like I'm like, and I think we got to get out of our, can you get big doing that? Like, cause I think that's one of the things these younger guys, they want to look good after they've done it too, but can you get big or you're not going to maybe be big doing it?
So we got to define what big is. Like, are you comparing a big hockey player to a big bodybuilder? Because the biggest hockey right. player will look like an absolute wimp next to the biggest bodybuilder. Yeah. But the bodybuilder's goals are size, not speed, dynamic ability, power, strength in compromised positions. Like, they don't care about any of that. All they care about is size. Yeah. So like, you know, and this is something that I talk to a lot of junior players about, because when junior players are scouting midget players or they have tenders or whatever, they'll say to them, and it's the same thing with some pro teams still that'll talk to me about guys I'm training or whatever. They're like, yeah, I need him to gain weight. I need him to get bigger. And it's like, dude, I could put 10 pounds on that guy right now, but 10 pounds on his frame, he's small. He's going to be slower. He's going to be dying on the ice with 10 pounds. Like, we want to get him especially now hockey's getting smaller. From when you and I played, hockey is smaller. Guys are dynamic. Like, I want my guys to be as strong as they possibly can be at a weight that is as light as they can be for their position. So a power forward is probably going to play at a lot heavier weight, obviously, than a guy who's the same size, who is a half wall power play guy who doesn't throw his weight around. But right. but like, I want them each for whatever weight is the lightest they can be at, the strongest they can be, and at a higher body fat than what teams want them at. So, you know, a lot more teams have bumped the body fat numbers up, but still there's a couple teams that are like, oh, if he's six, he's great. Well, he's going to be more susceptible to injuries, to being sick, to missing games. And you're paying that guy how much money? You know, like, you want him playing. I don't care how big he is or what, you know, whatever. Yeah. I care that he's better at hockey. But to answer your question again, like, I mean, I'm 222, 9% body fat, retired, twisted steel sex appeal, you know? So I mean, I think that's pretty big. How much bigger do I got to get?
Right. Yeah, no, fair point. I remember when, well, actually it's kind of two different questions. Maybe we'll stick on the same one. So then, as far as from a training standpoint, that single arm, you mean center of gravity away from yourself, like these types of like range of motion, strength positions, like to me comes in my mind, like kettlebells, comes to me, steel mace, type training, maybe even like some yoga-esque type things, because I mean, there's a lot of strength in joints that's required in these different ranges that they do. Like, is that sort of the direction that you're taking these pro guys now?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of all encompassing. Like my personal philosophy, I try to pull the best from everybody out there. It's always evolving, but the main tenets are in the off season, probably like unilateral 60-70%, bilateral 30-40%. In season, I kind of flip that.
Break down unilateral, bilateral for everyone listening.
Oh, sorry. Unilateral, more often than not, is like loading one side of the body or only holding like a weight on one side. So instead of a barbell back squat, if you've seen my gym on Instagram, I only show my actual gym during the off season. Now I film all my stuff in my new nasty home gym that I'm just finishing building tomorrow. Thank you so much. It's like literally my pride and joy. Instead of a barbell back squat, I believe, and studies show that you get a lot stronger, a lot faster, and a lot more applicable strength by doing a rear foot elevated split squat, which is kind of like a lunge, but you're standing still with one foot back and elevated. So it's kind of like a single leg squat mixed with a little bit of stability from the other leg. And then from there, once you get strong holding two dumbbells or a barbell in a Zercher position or a kettlebell in a goblet position, then you up the ante even more for your elite players or, you know, elite people training, and you put the dumbbell only on one side. Ipsilateral, meaning as the dumbbell is on the same side. So if my left leg is forward in a rear foot elevated split squat, I have a dumbbell in my left hand. All right. You can also do contralateral, where my left foot is forward, my right hand has the dumbbell. So it's pulling your body in a different way where you're having to resist different forces, very similar to on the ice, anytime anyone's pushing on you. If I got somebody pushing on one side and they rotate my shoulder, now they have position on the puck, they get the puck, they're off to the races. Or in front of the net, if I'm trying to screen and that D-man cross-checks me on my right shoulder, I don't have the strength to resist the rotation. Now the goalie sees a shot, he makes a save every time. But if I train a lot with one hand, one leg at a time, one weight twisting and pulling, and I have to resist that, I'm literally training to resist rotation under pressure. Right. So not only are you moving forward, backward, laterally, depending on the exercise, you're also having to resist rotation with all of the muscles that we use to be good at hockey. To me, it's a no-brainer. Everyone should train this way more often than not. It's the reason that I have, you know, I've trained over 10,000 athletes since COVID online. And, you know, I've trained thousands in person since I started my company.
That's cool. I mean, that stuff excites me. I think when you can get curious about that stuff, right? And again, be an innovator, but also take the best from what other people are doing. Like, it's fantastic. And I think you got to know your own body too. Like,
yeah,
I just like flashback to when I got traded to LA. You'll love this. Like, they, you know, they essentially, I went from leading the AHL in goals when I got traded to them telling me that I was going to be their fourth, probably third line right winger the next year, and they wanted me to put on 10 to 15 pounds to fulfill that role. Right. So, okay, fine. Like I said, like I was almost too coachable, I think, when somebody told me to do something. So I'm like, hell yeah. Like, all right, let's get her done. Doing like every type of weight gain shake you could ever imagine, eating all the time, doing like their program to a T, which was everything was like Olympic lifts and like really low rep and like, you know, like one rep, two rep max type thing. I squatted like, dude, I mean, I don't even know what you guys are doing now, but for me, I squatted 450 pounds to like 90 degrees. Like, yeah. That would probably crush me to even put it on my back right now.
Yeah.
Anyways, like, and my bench was huge. Anyways, I got to 215, 216. I was awful on the ice. Like, I found out that I was lactose intolerant from, which I didn't even know was a thing, right? From all this whey protein. So I was like bunged down, like biologically. Ooh. And like at got a cellular mangled level. And then yeah, I had all this weight that I didn't know what to do with because it didn't transfer it in my skating. I was slowest I've ever been.
Yeah, that's the stuff right there that drives me absolutely nuts.
And I'm the one that's at fault. I mean, then I'm the one punished for it too, right? Like, that's the crazy right part is like you try and do your best and you put kind of this sort of idea of your development in somebody else's hands, and it's the exact wrong thing that you should be doing.
Well, I also think that's why people that do what I do are so valuable. Like there's like, especially, I'm not just pumping my own tires, but like you get it too. You said you got to know your own body. Like you have to have people, maybe not at the high levels pro and up, but like, I think it helps so much more to have people that are on your training staff in the gym, NHL, college, junior, everything like that actually played the game at a high level, because like they would know, like somebody who knew you and knew how you played and knew how you skated and all that stuff, you know, if they knew that, okay, we're going to kind of change his role, but to put 15 pounds on you as a current pro and you're doing all of those ridiculous things because it's going to be hard for you to put on 15 pounds, you're already probably at a bigger end of size for you at that age. Like, that's, you're going to be slower. You're going to get injured more, and you're probably going to create a bunch of dysfunction in your gut, which is going to make you feel terrible, recover terribly. So now back-to-back nights, you're going to play even worse than you would have, you know? And so for me, you would have been way better at your current stature that you were at playing in a third line role than you ever could have been 15 pounds heavier and slower.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then, I mean, that's the thing. And you think you're going to be faster. At least I did. Well, I can squat this much. It must be like, this must be accessible power that's going to be into my stride. It wasn't even that way at all. It was brutal. No.
Because hockey is so much about mechanics. That's the thing that a lot of people don't understand, man. Like skating is not walking. Skating is not running. Sprinting translates to working your fast twitch muscle fibers, but you could be a great sprinter and an absolutely terrible skater because skating is a completely different biomechanical motion. It is not the same. So much of skating is stride efficiency. So like, that's something you have to work on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. I love that part of it is super, super fun for me. And then maybe we'll end with this one question. I think it all kind of comes back of like the idea of, I mean, you said to yourself, okay, so your experience was you were told to be Byron Bitts, right? And so you access that information in whatever way that you accessed it, and you thought you were supposed to become now this type of thing. And you're a coachable guy, and you ended up doing that to your detriment. Right. Yep. They were not trying to hurt you. They were trying to help you. I mean, you have to assume this was all in good faith. And so you go about, and that's your experience. I have two scenarios where the coach talked to me. One was in Toronto when I got traded there. I was there for like 6-7 games, and Mike Murphy took me aside into the Maple Leaf Gardens, and he sat me down. And I'm a 21-year-old kid, and he said, "We need you to play better defense. I want you to play better defense." And I mean, I'm like, okay. But at the time, I'm like, what are you talking about, though, as well, right? I'm like, I haven't played bad defense. I mean, mind you, I'm 21, so maybe I'm naive, but like, I wasn't minus. I don't remember. I didn't remember any bad turnovers. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I want to be an NHLer, and I want to be a Toronto Maple Leaf, so I'm going to play better defense. So like, that message to me turned into me being on the defensive side of every puck. You know, it turned into me being the high guy in the zone and not getting beat low. It had me, you know, playing this great D zone coverage and not like using any type of offensive instinct at all, right? Like I was just playing super conservative because I wanted to do the coach proud. And now looking back on that, like I was being a good little soldier, but it completely didn't help me. You know what I mean? Like there was no swagger there. There was no confidence to maybe take that information and be like, okay, yeah, coach, but maybe not. You know, like I still got to go jive and do my thing. And I don't know, like, how do you feel about that? Because, like, I feel that I'm teaching the players that I work with to be coachable, to ask the questions, right, and to deliver. But I do think there's a time where us as athletes, we can overcommit to whatever that message is, too. We take the feel and maybe our instincts out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I totally understand what you're saying, and I'm by no way faulting how the Bruins were talking to me and, or the Maple Leafs talking to you. I think that development people in pro hockey have gotten so much better because I think they've really dived into like learning how to be a better teacher, a better leader, a better friend. I think they're taking like more interest in psychology. Like, I think they're like more well-rounding how, cause you know, it's, and I say this all the time in the gym, I say it probably once a week, you know, working with people, like if I tell them to do something and they do it wrong, it's not, I personally, as a coach, I don't look at it as their fault. It's my fault. And I stop the gym, you know, in the academy I'm working with now, it's like 65 kids. It's, you know, 22, 21 or something. And I'll have them all be doing the same thing at some point. And if a couple of them are doing it wrong, well, then I didn't explain it good enough for the group. Right. And so I stop and say, okay, coach must not have done a good job. And I coach it a different way. I use different words. I find what connects with the player in front of me or players. And I think that what they said wasn't wrong, but I think they should have checked back in with you after two games and watched your video and said, hey man, when we said play better defense, we didn't mean don't think about offense. You're the leading goal scorer in the AHL, bro. Like, we need you to score, but just like in these situations, maybe think about this and then show you video. Obviously the technology wasn't the same back then, but yeah. I think that if they do that and there's like a plan and then check in and then tweak the plan, check in, I think that, you know, you probably would have played the rest of your career in the NHL probably.
Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's interesting too for how you're saying it, because that's like, that's my approach now with athletes, because everyone's different. Like, I know the guy that's the analytical overthinker and he wants to know exactly down to the detail what that means. Like, how do I execute that? You know, and that's what he needs to execute it well. There's the other kid that just needs a generalization. And he's just got to go play free, right? And so I think like that's where coaching, I think, is getting that way at the NHL level. It seems like it is a little bit where it's more individualized and check back in type scenario and see what that means. And yeah, I mean, I think the devil's in the details of how you communicate and what that actually means, because I didn't ask the question. And that's what I'm saying to the guys that I work with is like, well, what does that mean? Like, better defense to me meant those things that I did, right? Like, to him, it might have been in this one scenario, because he's not an expert communicator, Mike Murphy, right? Like, he knows in his head what he means. He says it this way, but it's not very clear what that actually is. My oldest son just got out of a meeting with his coach. The coach told him he wants him to play more simple. Mike's son walks out of that meeting kind of like,
what does that mean?
Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? Like, does that mean he's not supposed to be creative? He's not supposed to take on anyone one-on-one? Does it mean he shouldn't go cross ice in his neutral zone pass? Right? Like there's a lot of ways that a player can use that rightfully and maybe negatively for them. Right. So anyways, I guess just thinking about that confidence piece again, that parents are talking about, like these, like that's a human thing to be able to ask the question, to be able to understand yourself, to be able to be brave enough to ask a question in return so you can understand it, so you can execute on the ice better. That's nothing to do with whether I can play hockey or whether I can shoot or score. It's how I'm manifesting that information on the ice in real time.
Right.
Like, that's a big difference maker.
And I think that's where I tell all my guys, when you go into the coach's office, bring a notebook. Like, it's a lot of guys are nervous to be in there. It doesn't matter what level you're at. You're in the NHL. Guys in the NHL go to the coach's office, called in there, and they're nervous, right? Like, I think by having, and you know, this is something I tell all my guys to do, is like, have a notebook at the rink. And like, after games, when you're watching your video, take notes, write the date, you know, take notes of November 1st against, you know, whoever, Erie Otters, you know, just take some notes, what you did well, what you didn't do well, things you want to work on and practice that week. And this is something that I think is like, I can't believe that I didn't think about this when I was playing, because I was pretty cerebral on how to get better. I was pretty good at getting better because I wasn't naturally as good as everybody else. So I got good at like finding nutrition, working out, mindset, you know, all this sleep recovery, trying to get better in all these different ways so I could stay at the levels I wanted to be at. And I think that having a notebook that's like your notebook just for you, you write, you know, game notes in there. After the game, you write, okay, these are some things I want to practice on this week. Then you have to bring that notebook to the locker room, keep it in your stall. Before you go out to practice, check the freaking notebook. Because so many guys say, oh, I need to work on this, I need to work on this. Practice comes, they get on the ice early, they're with the boys, they totally forget, they do three puck after and they get off. They didn't work on the things that really could have taken their game to the next level, where all you had to do was write some notes from your video, go into coach's office, ask him how you're doing, what can I work on, write some notes. And then before practice, you look at that and, oh yeah, I need to, okay, after practice today, I'm going to work on these two things. Tomorrow, I'll work on those two. Before the game, I'll work on bang, bang. And every week you're going to be getting better. So like that little simple detail of bringing in a notebook to the coach's office when you're talking to them, to write down what they're saying, ask more detailed questions, so you leave there knowing what they're looking for, so that you can then execute on that versus play simple or play defense.
Fantastic. What? Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And it's in the execution of that. That's what I always think. Like, what do you take away from this call, or what do you take away from this lesson? Okay, I take away this. What's your plan on being able to execute it? Because you don't have a plan to execute it, it's just going to it's not going to happen, and we're just kind of both wasting our time. But it is so funny, like that communication barrier. Like, my son got cut from a team, and he didn't even know he got cut from the team. Like, after the meeting with the coach, right? Like, you talk about being nervous, like what's going on, and you're listening to what's coming in, and you hear a good thing, and you're not really sure. Like, I had to make a phone call one year to be like, so did he? Like, what's happening? Because he doesn't remember, you know? Like, like, so when you hear that, like, as funny as that is, like, that's...
It's real.
Like, that, like, for what you and I do, like, being really good at trying to explain, and you already said it, like, explain it in a different way, in a different detail. Everyone is a different learner, right? Is it words? Is it something else? Like, trying to connect those dots so these guys can make these differences that they want to make. I just love that. Like, to me, I geek out on that stuff. Like, I love that stuff. I think it's fantastic. And I think it's, and I do think it's like the, you want to be really good and you want to get to where you want to go. That's a competitive advantage right now. Plain and simple, period.
And it's the same for coaches. Like, on the flip side, we've had Adam Nicholas on our podcast probably more than anybody. He's skills coach from Montreal now. He was with the Chicago Steel when they won a bunch, and he's absolutely fantastic. He's somebody I would 100% say that you should get on your podcast. The NHL is weird about their scouts and their skill guys, though, coming on podcasts. It's really hard territory to navigate. But before he was in Montreal, he'd been on our podcast 4 or 5 times, and he always talks about, like, all coaches should take teaching courses. If you learn how to disseminate the information, your teams will be better because they'll understand what you're looking for and everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, that's a great way to spot to end. It's so funny. Like, I had no idea what I was getting into with this conversation and your history in the background. And that's the best part about it. So thank you for your stories and thank you for doing what you do and spending an hour and a half with me and my audience today. Really appreciate it, Jeff.
Absolutely, man. If anybody's looking like for like the stuff I talk about with working out on this podcast, if you follow me on Instagram, it's just my name at Jeff Lovecchio, the word love, CCHIO. I just put up free information every single day, mindset, training, nutrition. I just try to help people with that stuff because it's changed my life. Like, getting into training to be a hockey player made me a pro hockey player for 10 years, gave me a scholarship, and has afforded me the amazing life that I have now. And I pretty much just hang out with guys and make them better all day, every day in the gym. And I love my life. So I want to give as much of that away as I can.
Yeah, I love it. No, thanks for sharing that. I should have asked you. So my apologies on not. Yeah. And you got like a really big follow on Instagram too. I mean, at least big in my eyes. I know there's some craziness out there, but you know, whatever. I mean, you're doing real well there. You're obviously really busy, and it sounds like, you know, the podcast is doing great too. So congratulations on all the success. And if you ever want me on your show, by all means, I'd be happy to join.
So 100% we'll have you on. I'll text my co-host and producer right now, and we'll set that up, bro. Appreciate you having me on.
Like, we didn't even talk about him, but maybe we'll talk. Maybe I'll be able to ask a few questions on the show, because I love that idea about like this 5'4" guy and what he was able to do, and you being 6'2" and 215, and anyways, all kinds of stuff going through my head there, because that's one thing that you just end up with. You don't earn any of that, whether you're big or small, right?
It's
what you do with it.
Right, exactly. 100%. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Anyways, all right, man. Well, Jeff, thanks again for everyone. Again, Jeff Lovecchio on Instagram. Definitely a force there, and you're gonna find lots of training tips. And if you want to work with him, that's where you can find him. And we will maybe see him on the flip side on the Hockey Think Tank podcast, vice versa. So, till next time, everyone. Play hard. Keep your head up. All right, that will do it. Thank you for being here. Thanks for sticking around to the end. That was a pretty powerful conversation with a powerhouse himself. Lots and lots of energy in Jeff. I can see why he's so successful in the personal training space. He really obviously enjoys what he does. He's passionate about what he does. He gets excited about what he does. And that energy and that enthusiasm just carries over. And sometimes as athletes, which he was and, you know, still is, and I can relate to, you need that energy. You need that fire. You need that passion to come from something outside of yourself at times. And he totally seems like a guy that will be able to get the best out of you. I love the way that his approach to it. I love how he gets the players to confide their goals in him so he can hold them accountable to them and really get them to push their standards and push their limits. That is kind of what this whole process is, right? This whole up my hockey, this whole try to be the best that you can be. It's about your standards, and it's about recognizing that there is always a gap that could be filled, and about being curious about how it is that we can go about filling it. Do I need to work harder? Do I need to work differently? Do I need to train something differently? Is my mindset something that needs to be looked after? Is it my physical body that needs to be looked after? Am I dedicated enough to my goal and my dream? Do I need to take some of the gas off the pedal? There are so many interesting ways to unpack peak performance. And Jeff is obviously somebody that is dialed right in there and gets excited about athletes achieving their goals as I do. So it was great to have that conversation with him. Hockey Think Tank is obviously where he's at. He was able to talk about his app platform, getting a hold of him. If you want to train with Jeff, it seems like he's doing very well in that space and would come highly recommended. So until Jeff returns the favor and I get to be a guest on Hockey Think Tank, I think that we all benefited here at Up My Hockey. So thanks so much for being here and sticking around. And until next time, play hard and keep your head up.